What's up, guys? Welcome to Juice Podcast. My name is Saul Monnelly, at Saul Monnelly NBA on Twitter, joined by Adam Spolane of Sports Radio 610. Adam, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing okay. So the Rockets have played four games since we last recorded an episode, one against the Hornets, two against the Kings, and one against the Lakers. And they've won all four of them, quite the turnaround from the start of the year. This is the first time the Rockets have had a winning record in over a year, I believe. We're still in that weird part of the season where, like, the data doesn't really mean as much as it's going to in, like, eight games or so, I would say. But at the same time, the outlines of something is starting to form, right? It's no longer nothing like it was at the three-game mark. Like, the Nuggets, Warriors, Bucks, Celtics, and they're at the top of their conference already, right? Like, that's not far off from what we expected. So I'm going to start sprinkling in some numbers in today's episode as opposed to last week's, but not deep dive, right? Because I just don't feel like if I put stuff in right now, I feel like it's going to change so quickly and it's not going to mean as much. So without further ado, Adam, let's get into it. What to you fundamentally change from those first three games to the last four?
I think the rebounding has been big. And this is really more the last three games, but they were 30th in defensive rebounding rate after four games, and Ime Udoka kind of lit into them about it. And they did an old-fashioned rebounding drill before the first Kings game, and now all of a sudden they are 10th in the league in defensive rebounding. So that's kind of how you know the numbers. The sample size is incredibly small that you can move from 30th to 10th in the span of three games. But the fact that Udoka can harp on something and the fact that they can clean it up like that, I think that that sort of stuff is important because, you know, back a couple years ago or even last year, they might carry it over for one game, but you wouldn't see the carry. You wouldn't see the sustainability. So they had a great, they rebounded great that first Kings game. They weren't as good in that department, the second Kings game. And then last night against the Lakers, they were tremendous with the defensive rebounding. So that's been key to the turnaround. They aren't turning the ball over at all. Again, a big departure from the last couple of seasons. And they're shooting the three at a very high level. I mean, they're a top 10 offense right now. I don't necessarily think of them as being a top 10 offense the entire season. But if you make 39% of your three-pointers, you're going to be a really good offense. So the fact that they're hitting threes, I think, has been key. I don't know if there's like an individual thing that really stands out, but those are kind of the things that I really have noticed over these last, you know, handful of three games or whatever it is.
Yeah, the biggest two things for me is obviously they're starting to lock in defensively, which is the part of the rebounding thing you were talking about. And they're really starting to hit their threes. Like, as a team, like you touched on this too, like they're shooting like 47% from three over their past four games. Specifically, like Jalen Green, like he's been absolutely nuclear. Like, Jalen's made like 12 of his last 21 threes, which is bonkers. Last night, Austin Reeves was going under on ball screens while he was guarding Green, and Jalen was just making him pay for it, right? And he was also like moving off the ball and getting those catch and shoot looks that we know he's capable of. Like, we'll get to talking about him more as like a driver and like a longer conversation in a bit. But like defensively, they're like the second best defense over the last four games. Again, you're right, small sample size, which is why I don't want to talk about what they are for the whole season. What they did against the Kings like should be stricken from league pass. Like, it was so vulgar and disgusting. Like, they ate their lunch. Granted, no De'Aaron Fox. Granted, they're at home. But it was really, really impressive. And like, they just obliterated them on back-to-back nights. It was quite a show.
The first game was a little bit closer, but then they pulled away really down the stretch in the fourth. I mean, they went through a stretch in that first game where nobody could hit a shot. The Monday game was really impressive, though, just because of how thorough that beatdown was, and it really was from start to finish. And they did the same thing against the Lakers. Like, they've gotten off to these really good starts in these games, and they haven't dropped their level, which I think has been something that we don't always see from. That was an issue just even earlier this season in the Charlotte game. They dropped their level. The San Antonio game, they dropped their level. So to see them being able to carry it over for as long as, you know, starters were in the game, I think it's been a really good positive sign for them. The performance from Şengün in the two Sacramento games, I think was really important because they knew without Fox that Sacramento would run their entire offense through Sabonis. Like, they knew that. They were ready for it. And Sabonis tore them apart last year. I mean, Sabonis averaged a triple-double in the four games, and he badly outplayed Şengün in those four games. And Şengün was able to really turn the tables on that. And the big key for him, you know, Sabonis is physical, and Sabonis is going to get to the free throw line, but Şengün did not foul him. And so not only did he outplay Sabonis, he was able to stay on the floor. And really, the second game, I think it was Sabonis who got in foul trouble. So that's been a really key development for them so far. Just when you look at what Şengün has done, is that he has been able to avoid fouls. And those were the two games where you thought, okay, foul trouble could really be an issue for him. And it wasn't.
And he really put his chest into Sabonis, right? Like, he was really like tough and physical with him while not fouling, which I thought was impressive. That second game, I thought for sure Sabonis was going to like eat his lunch. And it didn't. He had a couple possessions where he went at Şengün, but really, like, he didn't really make a dent compared to like what he did to Şengün last year. And it was you know, a testament to Şengün and, you know, where he's at, you know, building out his body and getting better defensively and obviously working on the foul trouble and all that stuff. But like, yeah, I mean, it really was just like a defensive, like what they've done defensively over the past four games has been really, really impressive. What to you is like sustainable moving forward, going, you know, forward into the season, and what's unsustainable? Obviously, like, we talked about some of that stuff, but what to you is like, you know, sticks out?
You know, they've gotten some fortunate schedule luck. I mean, you just look where the Kings are without Fox the two games. The Lakers are without Davis. It looks like they're going to play they're going to play the Pelicans without CJ McCollum. They could play them without Zion tomorrow night. And then Jamal Murray's not going to play on Sunday. So they've been a little fortunate to that degree. But I mean, if you communicate and if you're in the right place defensively, that stuff is sustainable. It's just a matter of, can you finish possessions by getting the rebound? And so far, at least in these last three games, they've been able to. So I don't know if they've had like some crazy 3-point luck during this stretch. I haven't looked at those numbers, but you know, that would be the only thing that would concern me about, is this sustainable or not, as if teams are like shooting 20% against them on open threes. But I don't think that's really been much of an issue. So I mean, they have good defenders on this team now. I mean, you look at what they were putting out on the floor the last couple of years, and Fred VanVleet and Dylan Brooks are much, much better than any other defender that they have had. And those guys are locked in. And, you know, I talked to Jayshon Tate about this after the game last night. He just talked about how the communication has been better than it's ever been. And so those are things that can carry over. And, you know, you give Şengün credit also for his ability to, you know, teams are hitting most of their shots at the rim. I think teams are shooting like 70% against them at the rim right now, but they're also not getting a lot of those shots. Mm-hmm. You know, I think the Rockets have allowed the fourth fewest shots in the restricted area so far this season. They aren't turning the ball over, which is helping the defense. They've allowed the fewest fast break points in the league. I mean, those sorts of things you can sustain. Like, you can continue to take care of the basketball, and teams aren't going to get transition opportunities. So to me, the defensive stuff seems like it could probably be sustainable. Maybe not top 10 defense, but at least top half of the league. And then it's just a matter of, can the offense kind of keep up with it?
Yeah, obviously the 3-point shooting as a team is going to fall back to earth a little bit, right? Like, I've got news for you, Jayshon Tate.
Yeah, you're shooting 39.
Yeah, Jayshon Tate's not going to shoot 50% from three, right? He's not going to keep doing that. As much as he seemingly improved as a shooter with his shot selection, Dylan Brooks is due for some aggression in his percentages. Obviously, Jalen didn't suddenly become a 45% 3-point shooter overnight. But I'll say this. A lot of these guys are capable shooters. Like, Fred VanVleet's a legitimately very good 3-point shooter. Dylan Brooks has always been a reliable off-the-catch shooter. The problem has always been not all his shots have been off the catch, right? But he's adjusted his usage and his the shots that he's taking this season. And I thought, you know, it's been kind of smart for him, obviously, in being more efficient. I believe in Jalen's shot. I've always believed in it. I've never been one of those people that was concerned about it, that it wouldn't eventually come around to being reliable. Because I watched him like make it reliably well in high school and at the G League. And Jabari, like, listen, like, this is one of his two greatest selling points as a player. He kind of has to keep this going. And I think it's possible that, you know, while some of this is going to drop off in the shooting department, you know, they have more shooting than people might look at first glance. Like, I think they're probably going to be closer to middle of the pack than, you know, most people think they're going to be.
Yeah, but you don't want to be reliant on that. And so there are going to be nights where they don't make threes. That's a high variance stat. But can you get offense in other ways? And you saw Jalen Green start to get to the free throw line a little bit more on Wednesday night. That's something that that can always be there. Like, if you can get to the line, you can get to the line, and that's just an easy way to get cheap points. If you don't turn the basketball over, you're going to get shots up. And at some point, you're going to make some of those shots. And where they have really struggled offensively the last couple of years, that they've been one of the worst turnover teams in the league. And right now, they are in the top 10 in turnover rate. Like, if they can keep that going, then you can have a sustainable offense. If you can get stops defensively, you can get out in transition a little bit more and not have to work out of the half court nearly as much. So there are always ways to be good offensively, and even when you're not making threes. And so if they can do some of the little things that they have been doing at least over these four games, and then they can sustain the offense. And just to get back to the three-point shooting, the opponent three-point shooting, opponents over these four games are shooting 32% from three, which is obviously a low number, but it's not like in the 20s. You know, you might, over the course of a season, you might allow 36% from three. So it's not that big of a difference. You know, it's basically one made three a game almost. So I think that the 3-point defense will be, you know, all that stuff can come around. So I think that a lot of what they're doing is probably sustainable.
Yeah. I mean, like, defensively, they're going to play tougher opponents also, and, you know, healthier ones, right? Like, you talked about that, right? Like, so far they've played a rebuilding Hornets team, a Kings team without De'Aaron Fox, and a Lakers team without Anthony Davis, right? But you do get credit for defending the people that are in front of you. And they did that. But those aren't exactly world beaters offensively. Coming up on the schedule, they play the Pelicans, which they've had trouble with in the past. Granted, they're a little bit hurt, right, with CJ McCollum out and possibly Zion, but they've had trouble with the Pelicans before. The Nuggets, obviously defending champs. No Jamal Murray, still defending champs. The Clippers, those are going to be tougher opponents there. They're going to be really, really tough to defend, and there's just a lot more shooting and rim pressure to worry about with those teams than there were the teams that they've already played. And you're potentially missing Şengün against New Orleans because he's got the sprained ankle. So I think that's going to be an area I'm just going to watch out for. Like, I think defending the three ball, obviously, I think they've done a decent enough job, right? Like, they've improved on their perimeter defense by just bringing in Van Vliet and Brooks. But, like, how sustainable that is going to be interesting to watch. Tari Eason's going to help in that department, obviously, like getting him back. I actually think getting Jae'Sean Tate acclimated to the rotation again is been a big positive for them. Like, Jae'Sean Tate, I don't think people remember how good he was his rookie year defensively. Like, he was legitimately contending for like an all defense spot. Like, I think he got some votes there. Like, he was really, really good. And I think having him just coming off your bench is a real weapon. But yeah, I'm very curious to see how they defend some of these tougher opponents, though.
Yeah, and the one thing that they haven't done well defensively is turn teams over. You know, they are 24th in forcing turnovers per game. Getting Easton back, that will help that. You know, Easton will have the ability to create some turnovers, so that will help. So there are some things that they've done really well defensively, and then there are some things that they can really improve on defensively. The rebounding, which we talked about, which has been better over these last three games, if you cannot be 30th over a three-game or over a four-game stretch, then, you know, that's going to help things out. So certainly they will play better opponents. They will play healthier opponents. But if they can do the little things right, if they can rebound, if they cannot turn the basketball over, if they cannot foul, then you can have a sustainable defense. It might not be elite, it might not be top 10, but it can at least be passable. And passable certainly works after what you've seen the last few years.
Yeah, and like, I mean, the hope here with the Rockets, obviously, is that they improve enough to where it still shoots them up the standings a little bit, right? I don't know how high they eventually get. right? Like they're not going to be sixth in the Western Conference. I can guarantee you that. But can they push for a play-in, right? That seems to be their goal this year. And, you know, if you're 14th in defensive rating, like that might be enough, right? That might be enough to get you the 10th seed, right? Like it's something to watch, right? Like how good they continue to be defensively. Ime has certainly helped in the department, but like their additions more so, I think, on the perimeter have really kind of insulated Şengün and Jabari and kind of helped clean up some of the issues. All right, Adam, let's talk about Jalen Green because we've touched on him a little bit. He's obviously playing really well. It looks like he's going to be a bit more efficient as a scorer this year. He's shooting 46% from three and 58% true shooting. Obviously, that three-point number is going to come down. But I would bet he's going to shoot higher than his career average from three before this year, which was about 34%. He's probably going to be higher this year. And he's going to shoot better at the rim than he's currently shooting. Right now, his rim numbers are not that great. Like, he had a great rim night last night. But in general, he's not shot that well at the rim. So I think the true shooting might not go down as much as we think it will. But I bring him up because the conversation around him has gotten, in my opinion, unnecessarily complicated. Let's start here. What were your personal expectations for him going into this season?
You just wanted to see growth. Like, that's really, you wanted to see improvement from year two to year three. I mean, I think that for all these guys, that's what you're just looking for. I didn't like sit back and say, okay, I expect him to score this number of points and have this, you know, many assists. You just wanted to see him get better, and you wanted to see him get better, and you wanted to see him get more consistent. I think that that's all you're looking at, especially at this point of the year, because it is still so very early, and he's got to acclimate himself to a bunch of new teammates too, which is not easy. I mean, yeah, he's played with some of these guys for a couple of years, but for the most part, they have a brand new starting lineup. You know, he's got a new back, you know, both everybody that he's playing with in the backcourt, aside from Tate, but between Van Vliet and Amen Thompson when he was healthy, and now Aaron Holiday, those are all guys that he hasn't really played with. So he's got to get used to playing with them. Really, the one guy who's getting big minutes that he's played with, you know, for a long time is Şengün. And so, you know, you're still trying to figure everything out. You're trying to figure out a new staff. You're trying to figure out just kind of the new expectations for what you're being asked to do. So I think that so far he's learning and he's getting better. And I would tell people not to necessarily look at the numbers. It's one of those things where you just want to see it. You know, you need to see it on the floor, because he had the game Saturday against Sacramento. And if you look at the box score, you would say, oh, he had 10 points. And
I thought he played well. Yeah.
And that's kind of the point that I want to get to, because we were talking with Van Vliet and Dylan Brooks after that game, and they both just raved about how well he played, because he basically took what the defense gave him, and he made the correct read every single time down in the fourth quarter. They were running pick and roll, and they were oftentimes doubling him on the pick and roll, and he was just making the right play. Like, sometimes that's all you have to do. And it's not sexy, and it's not going to, you know, the numbers might not pop out at you, but at the end of the day, if you win the game, then who cares? And so that's all you want to see. You want to see him be on the floor when they're winning games, and he's been on the floor for these last four games. They're winning games, and he's been a big part of it. So, you know, the numbers might not always look great, but that sometimes doesn't matter. You're going to have nights where you don't shoot the ball well. You're going to have nights where the defense really focuses in on you. I mean, I imagine that when teams are game planning for the Rockets, he's at the top of the list. And so, you know, the first thing is, we got to take away Jalen Green. So how do you adjust to that? So the fact that he had that quiet game, at least numbers wise, on Saturday, he then came back on Monday, got off to a really hot start in that game against the Kings. He was really good last night against the Lakers. And that's the stuff that you want to see. So the shooting's been good so far, but you're just seeing a maturity in his game, I think, over the first seven games of the season. He's not touching the ball nearly as much. His front court touches have gone down. I think he went from 34 front court touches now to 26, but he's making the most out of what he's getting at this point of the year. And I figure the touches will go up. I do want to see him run the offense a little bit more and be a little bit more assertive when he's doing that, but all that stuff will come.
Yeah. So a lot of people going into this year were just expecting this massive third year leap into like an all-star caliber guard, right? And like my thing was like, sometimes like, like if it happens, it happens, right? Like that, like there, it's certainly not unprecedented. Like, but third year leaps aren't always guaranteed, especially for guys of this ilk. It can kind of be hit or miss. Like Devin Booker and Anthony Edwards had third year leaps, right? But Bradley Beal and Zach LaVine didn't, right? Like Zach LaVine didn't have a third year, he didn't make the All-Star team to like his sixth year in the NBA, right? Like sometimes it can take some time as long as you're seeing growth there, like game to game, which I think like I've seen him get better as a ball handler. I've seen him get better at getting the free throw line. I've seen him get better running pick and roll. Like he's gotten better in a lot of different areas. And as long as that continues to happen, I don't know why people seem to scrutinize him on a game-to-game basis like they are. Like, if you go on Twitter, the reactions are so, it's so fickle. Like, people are so fickle with this guy. And it's like, guys, we don't have to complicate this, right? There are roadmaps here. Like, the play, like he was compared to guys coming into the NBA that were like pretty, there weren't, nothing's a one-to-one comparison, but these are pretty decent roadmaps, right? And you can look at those guys at this stage in their career when they were in their third season, look at where Jalen is in their third season, he's comparing pretty favorably with them, right? Like it doesn't have to be so microscopic, right? It doesn't have to be so like, oh, is he shooting well? Is he passing well? Like it's so weird for me with like, just the game-to-game overreactions. But I feel like he's getting better. And I feel like this season, it's interesting to see Ime Udoka kind of put him out there by himself with second units, right? Because like they're basically taking Van Vliet and Şengün out at the same time and having him run that second unit. And I thought that was a little, you know, kind of strange at first, because I'm like, I feel like the offense is going to tank if you don't have one of those guys in there, right? Because historically it has. But I feel like they're doing that as kind of a growth mechanism thing for him. They're doing that, I think, for him to get pick and roll reps, or for him to get reps running the offense. Like watching him last night, like when they pulled those two, I was like, oh, like this could be ugly, right? Because they've lost the leads against the Kings when they've done that. And then they didn't lose the lead because Jalen kind of went off. Like he took control of the offense and played his game. And you forgot that, you know, Van Vliet and Şengün were on the bench for big stretches of that explosion. And I think that's kind of the idea they've had in mind. Have the Rockets talked about, like, I know at the beginning of the year, at media day, I believe Ime said he wanted He wanted Jalen to become a more better, like all around player, right? Is that kind of like their plan here? Like they're like to put him out there kind of alone like that and kind of help him grow, get those reps by himself?
I don't know if that's exactly the plan, because I think the way that they've kind of done substitutions is that, and it's hard to say now because without Thompson, they've shifted things a little bit, but it would be Van Vliet would go out early in the first quarter and Green would stay out. And then they would bring Şengün out of the game also, you know, soon after. So I think they want Şengün out there with that second unit a lot of times. But it's kind of shifted over the last couple of games. And then Landale got hurt, and now, you know, they went small in yesterday's game. So it's hard to say, I guess, at this point. But to the first thing that you talked about, I think that Green got kind of billed as this, like, elite scorer when he came into the league. And he scored 30 in like his third or fourth game in the NBA. And so people are thinking, well, this guy's going to average 30 a game. And that's just not how this works. And he's had his nights where he scored 40. And I think he had a bunch of 40-point games last year. He had one as a rookie. But so people are only going to judge by the box score number. And again, that's not the way to do this. And so, you know, if teams are going to take you away, then you have to be able to go to a plan B, and he's been able to show that he can get them into that plan B. And again, he's not going to put up the huge scoring numbers, at least not right now. He just doesn't have the ball enough. Like if you're going to score 40 a game or 30 a game, you probably need to lead your team in front court touches. And he doesn't do that. He's way down the list of, I think he's like fourth or fifth, just in terms of front court touches per game on this team between Van Vliet and Şengün and some of the other guys that they have. So, until he starts touching the ball more, he's not going to have these huge offensive nights right now. So I think
he does have like a 28% usage. So it's not like he's not touching the ball.
But there are, let me pull it up because I was just looking at this today. He has the high usage, like he's making the most out of his touches, but he's not touching the ball nearly as much as I think that you would probably think that he should be touching the basketball. And so I'm trying to pull this up on the fly here. Sorry about that.
No, you're good.
Because Şengün leads their team in front court touches, and I just pulled up team and not player, which was not exactly this thing that I was supposed to be doing. So Şengün leads them in front court touches, and he's at like 40 front court touches a game, which is fine. I mean, he's been very good for them, and they kind of want to run their offense through him a lot of times, and there's nothing wrong with that. But you know, you also have Van Vliet, you have Brooks, and you have some of these other guys who are going to see the ball a lot also. And you know, you try and make the most out of what you can get. All right, here we go. Front court touches. It's Şengün 1, Van Vliet. Okay, Green's third. But Green's at 26 touches a game. It's Şengün at 43.6. It's Van Vliet at 32. And then it's Jalen Green at 26. So he's just kind of making the most out of what he's been given so far. And I imagine as the season goes along, we'll see those numbers start to go up a little bit more, especially on those when he's on the floor and it's just him.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I mean, like, I haven't had an issue with how they've used him offensively. Like, I actually kind of like when he is off the ball, right? Because, like, I think that's one of his strengths, and I don't want that to go away, right? Like, I think, like, for example, like, James Harden in Oklahoma City was a very good off-the-ball player. Then he went to Houston and, like, became this guy who never moved, right? And, like, hasn't broken that shell again. But Green, like in the with the Ignite, was a very talented off the ball mover, and I'm like, I kind of want that to be more of his game, and I this year it has been. To his credit, Ime has used him more off the ball. Yeah, I mean, I think Van Vliet's actually, his additions actually helped with that, because Van Vliet's having to kind of, you know, shepherd that offense a lot more, and Green can just play his game, which is kind of off of him, playing off of him off the catch, you know, attacking closeouts. And when he has that stretch with by himself, he can run pick and roll, right? He can, you know, do what he's been doing with you know, Jeff Green, with Jock Landale, with whatever big is out there at that moment. And I think he's growing game by game in that area. That was not an area of strength of his coming into the league. Like, he was not very good at pick and roll with the Ignite. And I think that appears to be, I mean, I can't, it's hard to know without, you know, asking Ime like what exactly the idea is there. But those minutes with him by himself, I don't know. I'm just going to be watching a lot more to see how he kind of grows. And I would like to see Şengün out there with him more, because I think their games complement each other well. And I think Green's even talked about how those two have pretty good pick and roll chemistry with each other. So I want to see more of it. I think it would be nice to see those two operating off give and goes, off triple handoffs, off pick and rolls with each other. I mean, they're you know, for all intents and purposes, they're the two best offensive players on the team. It was just nice to see them kind of play off each other a little bit more, other than when they're just starting together. But that's just some stuff I've noticed.
Yeah, I think some of that will come, but I think a lot of it too is you have all these new guys on the team, so you want to try and get. You know, guys minutes together who haven't gotten minutes together, just so that they're acclimated and just so you can see how everything looks. I think we all have a pretty good idea of how things look when Jalen Green and Alperen Şengün are on the floor together, just because we've seen it so much over the last couple of years. But you don't necessarily know how it's going to look with some of these other guys. So I think as the season goes along, you'll start to see them tinker a little bit more with rotations. I think this season is so new. You're just trying to get everybody's feet wet at this point and get everybody acclimated with playing with one another. And you're still, I still think that they are very much in that experimentation stage of everything, just because training camp in this league is so short. You know, I think training camp is what, not even 3 weeks, and you got to play a bunch of preseason games during that stretch. So you just don't have a ton of practice time. They did have a little bit of practice time last week, and they're going to have a bunch of practice time coming up next week. I mean, they play Sunday, and then they don't play again until Friday. So again, that'll be another good opportunity for them to probably get some 5-on-5 in. They haven't had Eason either, and so I think that's probably hurt them. They haven't had Amin Thompson. I think that's probably hurt, you know, just some of what they were probably trying to do when the preseason started. So I think that you'll probably see more and more of some of this stuff. I want to see if I can try and figure this out, just how much that they have played Şengün and Green together so far this season, because I do think that what you say is right. Like, those two do have a really good chemistry with one another, and they played with each other a long time. They know each other really well just from having done that. And let's see, Green and Şengün, they have played together 23 and a half minutes per game this season. And there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. There are 6 duos that have logged more minutes together per game. So yeah, you're right. They probably should be playing together a little bit more. But I do think that at the same time, like, Şengün has played more with Van Vliet, but not by much. They're at 25.7 minutes.
Oh wait, Van Vliet loves Şengün. Like, Van Vliet gives the ball to him almost every time down the floor. Like, he's always looking to run a pick and roll with him. It's just funny. Like. Immediately he comes in and he, like, I don't know if it's like a point guard thing, he like recognizes, like, oh, this is our hub right here, and he starts like giving the ball to him almost every time down the floor, and their chemistry has been pretty good too. I mean, it's not a bad thing that those two are playing together.
No, not at all. And I do think that, and I've been wanting to ask Van Vliet about this, because obviously Pascal Siakam and Şengün are very, 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 very different players, but Siakam got the ball a lot, and Siakam would run a lot of that Toronto offense, and even with Scottie Barnes, you know, Scottie Barnes would run a lot of that Toronto offense, and Van Vliet is very comfortable playing off the basketball also. So I do think that that's been one of the benefits to having him, is that he's more than comfortable just dumping the ball inside to Şengün wherever he's going to be positioned on the floor, and then he can still be a threat. You know, there are other guys, there are other point guards who, once they don't have the ball, they immediately just become neutralized and they don't know how to play at that point. That's not a problem with Van Vliet. And I think that just the way that he started out in the league in Toronto, where he wasn't one of the focal points, I think that's really helped him. And that's really made the transition to being with the Rockets a whole lot more seamless than maybe it would have been with other guys.
He's a textbook definition of a point guard. I mean, like, he really does try to make the right play every time down the floor. Like, if you were to, like take a play from Fred VanVleet with the Rockets to kind of like encapsulate like his season, his, what he's here for with the team, that half court like floater three pointer to, you know, to beat the buzzer, where, like, no one takes those shots, right? Like players all the time, they play out the clock and they pretend like they're going to shoot it, but because they don't want to hurt their percentages. VanVleet's like, I don't care. I'm trying to win the game. I'm going to take this shot, and he makes it. And it's the right basketball play, right? It's very Chris Paul-like in that way. Like, Chris Paul takes those shots, right? And he doesn't care how it affects his percentages. He doesn't care if it's reflected differently in like his numbers. Like, he Van Vliet has his money, right? Like, he doesn't have to worry about like making his resume look good. I think teams around the NBA know what he is. The Rockets certainly value what he is. They really value what he is. And it's really his signing couldn't have worked out better. I mean, like, if I were to say like my biggest surprise is just how impactful he's been, because I think, like, I was asked on friend of the podcast, Dan Favalli, on his show, like, who is Van Vliet going to help the most coming into the Rockets? And I was like, Jalen Green. I thought it was gonna be Jalen Green, and he's helped Jalen Green, but I actually think I was wrong there. I think he's helped Şengün the most, right? I think he's just recognized immediately how good this dude is, and he's been so willing to give him the basketball because he wants the team to win, right? And like that to me has been like a very pleasant surprise for me. Like, what to you has like surprised you? You can react to that if you want to, but like, what to you has like surprised you this early going?
Well, I think just off of that point, I think he's helped them all.
Yeah.
I think that signing and the Brooks signing have been just home runs so far. And we can talk about Brooks here in a minute, but I think what's been important about the free agent signings that they made is that it's not just that they brought veterans into the fold, but they brought veterans into the fold that are actually like invested in the team. And this is nothing against Eric Gordon. And Eric Gordon was a good vet to have. And Eric Gordon is a good, you know, lead by example type guy. But Eric Gordon wasn't like going to put his arm around anyone and say, hey, you need to do this. That's just not how he was.
Yeah.
And he really had no investment into the future of the organization. just because he wanted to win games. He was not here to be a babysitter. He wanted, you know, he's at the stage of his career where he wanted to go win. And,
yeah, he signed his extensions in the Harden era, right? That's when he signed his extensions.
Yeah. He had one foot out the door, and he was kind of over the whole thing, and so he wasn't going to be the babysitter. I think that bringing in Van Vliet and bringing in Dylan Brooks and even, you know, the Jeff Greens of the world and Jock Landale's, like, just getting those types of vets in here, like, those guys are invested in the team, and they're invested in seeing this group get better, especially Van Vliet and especially Brooks, because they're going to be here for a little bit and they would like to be able to win some games. And they know the only way that that's going to happen is if the young guys are able to grow and to hit their ceiling. So I think that part has been really important. And just seeing the way that, like, the when training camp started, you know, Van Vliet, like, giving everybody gifts and, you know, trying to make sure that, you know, he's the team guy and he wants to be that leader. And I think that he's the perfect guy to be able to do it. And he learned from Kyle Lowry in Toronto. And, you know, I talked to him about this back during training camp where he learned from Lowry, and Lowry said, hey, you got to do this with the next guy. And then the next guy will do that for, you know, whoever's coming up next. And so he really took that stuff to heart. And I think it's been just a perfect match. And, you know, we spent a lot of time talking about Harden, and I'm sure Harden would have helped them, you know, had they gone in that direction. But I don't know if he would have helped them the way that Van Vliet has helped them, at least so far.
No, Van Vliet has the right mentality for this team. Right. I think that's probably the difference there. Like Harden is at a different, I don't know what Harden wants. I'm not going to talk about Harden's. I can't get in his head. I don't know what Harden wants. Right. I at this point, I have no idea what Harden wants. But Van Vliet, I know what he wants. Right. He just wants to win. Right. He just wants to help these young guys get better. He's vocalized that. And his impact has been, you know, dramatic. You said we can talk about Brooks right now. I mean, Brooks has been, listen, I defended that number that he signed for, harder than most people. Like he was like an 80, was 82 for 4 years or 86 for 4 years ended up being, I thought that was fine. Right. It was a declining number and like people looked at that as like, oh, you're giving him how much per year. But like, here's the thing, guys, the cap is going to go up like an insane amount. When this TV deal comes in, like it's going to go up like 8 to 10% a year pretty soon, and this number is going to drop and take up even less percentage of the cap, even if it stays still. But it's going up, and also like this guy's just a good player. Like he's just a good basketball player. For some reason, like that's a surprise to people that Dylan Brooks is good at basketball. Like the Dylan Brooks is a starting caliber wing in the NBA as of last year. Is helping a team win basketball games. Like okay, maybe the shooting you can be surprised at, right? Because he's never been this great of a shooter. But the fact that he's helping the Rockets in this positive way, I don't know where he developed this reputation that he wasn't like a useful NBA player. That to me never made sense.
Well, the problem is he was kind of his own worst enemy with some of that stuff. And the back and forth with LeBron in the playoffs didn't help. The back and forth with Draymond Green, like you can't win those battles if you're Dylan Brooks. You just can't. And so getting into those battles certainly didn't help. He had an ability to shoot teams out of games. That didn't help either. And then you had the stuff from Memphis where they basically, you know, came out and said as soon as their season ended, yeah, we're moving on. And so again, that kind of left a bad taste in some people's mouths. But he's reined in a lot of the antics, I guess, would be a good way to put it. Like, he's reined that in. He's not taking over the offense and hurting the offense the way that he did in Memphis. You look at just his shot selection that's been huge. I mean, he's taking fewer than 10 shots a game for them. And I put this number out earlier today, and I'll rehash it here. But, you know, last year, you know, 2 years ago, he was taking 16 shots a game. Last year, he was taking 14 shots a game. This year, he's taking 9. You know, last year, he was taking 6 threes a game. This year, he's taking less than 4. So the shot selection has just been so much better, and that has made him a more efficient player, and it has really accentuated the stuff that he's really good. Like, he's an elite defender. But as good as he is defensively, it gets lost when you're taking 16 shots a game and shooting, you know, 38% from the field or whatever it is. So the fact that he is not shooting nearly as much, he's been a more efficient player because of it. And so then the defensive stuff, you just see just how great he is on that end of the floor. And he, you know, we talk about how they've improved so much defensively. I mean, a big reason of that is just having him out there.
Yeah, and real quickly, like, you're right. The shot selection issues were a thing with him in Memphis, right? Like, I'm not going to pretend like it wasn't a thing. But that 16 shots a game number, that was inflated last year because of all those games that Bain and Ja Morant missed, right, for one reason or another, right? Those guys were missed a ton of games due to injury, or not due to suspension or injury, right? So, like, that he took on a burden offensively. He did shoot them out of games. Not that last year wasn't the only year where he had bad shot selection, but I just wanted to really quickly touch on that. But you're right, like, he has taken a backseat role in Houston's offense. The only time he really takes the lead is like when he's in transition and using his body to get to the basket, which I think he's, you know, good at, so why not do it? Like, if you're able to finish at that clip at the rim, go do that. Like, I that's a positive play for the team. And I think, you know, I'll never get over his crazy closeouts. Like, his I'm going to guard you with one hand and jump over you to the side. Like, I'll never get over that. It always feels like he's about to run into a chair out of bounds, right? But, like, it works, right? Like, he is an elite defensive player, and he does have a positive impact on that perimeter defense. Like there are less shots attempted at the rock in the paint than ever before for the Rockets. And like, I think, you know, guys like Eason, guys like Tate, like, that's really going to rub off, you know, guys like Jabari Smith, right? Like, that's really going to rub off that versatility on the wing. And yeah, it's just a positive, like, pretty damn good signing. I think it's going to look much more favorable as time moves on.
He took 7 threes a game in that Lakers playoff series, and he got ejected in one of those games. I mean, he was just chucking up shots. And then again, he's not doing that right now, and that's been huge. And I give Udoka a lot of credit for reining that in. And, you know, I think that if
this is what Udoka does, by the way. He did this with Marcus Smart too. Marcus Smart, he goes in and coaches Marcus Smart and reins in those off the dribble threes. Like, he's got a talent for these guys. And I'm guessing that's probably why he felt confident he could do it with Dylan Brooks. Like, he was part of the Dylan Brooks signing. And I imagine Marcus Smart had some, he thought about, that was in his mind as they were pursuing that.
But if Dylan Brooks is like your fourth or fifth option on the floor, that's a damn good fourth or fifth option. Yeah. Look at what he brings defensively. But if he's like option two or three, well, then it gets a little bit iffy. But the fact that he's been able to play within the offense and to not take shots away from the better offensive players, that's been really, really important for them, and it's going to help them win games. It's just, can he continue to do that for 75 more games this season?
I think I wrote about this summer. I think the off the dribble threes for Marcus Smart got cut in half when Udoka got there, which was nuts. I had to make sure I got it right multiple times, like, while I was writing that story. And I mean, he's been good. He's been good. He's been really, really good. The Rockets have been pretty good to start the season. We'll see what is sustainable, what isn't. We're still early. But I think I'll say this. The Rockets have gotten better. Like, I don't know. We don't know how much better yet, but I think it's clear that they've gotten better. They're a better basketball team than they were last year.
No, for sure, and they had better be better when you consider that they went out and signed a bunch of guys in free agency, and the guys that they have drafted high in the draft are a year older. It helps when you don't have to play rookies. With the men Thompson being hurt, they aren't playing any rookies right now. So all the guys that they're playing, you know, kind of know what they're doing in this league, and I think that that's been beneficial. And when they have had to play a men Thompson before he got hurt, he was the only rookie that was getting minutes, so when you can play guys who have a little bit more experience and they know what they're doing, I think that that helps. I think that they're playing with much more effort on the defensive end of the floor. You know, I think that's been a big thing with Şengün. We talked about how he's improved defensively, but he's simply playing a lot harder than he had in the past. He's in much better shape, and you can see it just with the lower body, and that's really what he spent a lot of the summer working on. So their young guys have improved the way that I think that you've wanted to see them improve. And then they brought in the right veterans to help round out the rest of the roster and really push that floor up.
Right. Let's end on this. What are you most interested in seeing over the next 20 or so Rockets games?
You just want to see how everything fits together. And that's the best way to put it, because like, I'm not really worried about Amen Thompson and his injury and his minutes. I think that they're not going to put a whole lot on his plate right now. I do think that you want to see, can they keep this up to the point to where when you get into January, are you thinking like legitimately about making the playoffs, and are you making moves to maybe push your odds a little bit? Because they do have an ability to add at the deadline if they want to. Like, they've got some contracts that they can stack to bring in another player. They have some picks that they can add to that. So I do want to see if they are still over 500 in a month. Like, did they start, or even in 6 weeks, are they going to start thinking about, do we want to be buyers at the deadline instead of sellers? Because I do think that they have ways to add if they want to. And obviously they have a reason to want to win, first of all, just because they've been so bad the last few years that I think it would just be good for the fan base and to generate some interest if they are good. And then B, they don't control their pick. So you might as well, if you're going to be good, this is the year to be good. And then maybe you get lucky and Brooklyn is terrible and you still get some lottery luck with that. So I think that there's obviously they have all the incentive in the world to try and be good. It's just a matter of, can they sustain what they're doing right now? And if they can, do they look to be buyers at the deadline? I guess that's what I'm looking for.
Oh, you took mine. That's exactly what I was going to say. Like, I think how they round out this bench is going to be fascinating, right? Because like, obviously guys are going to get healthy. Easton's already came back. Amen's going to come back at some point. And you know, obviously that's going to help, you know, fortify things a little bit, but that's still a lot of young guys that you're depending on. So I wonder, like, you know, the Oladipo contract is obviously expiring. I think the hope there, if you're going to make a trade, is the guy you trade for is more of a long-term piece than just kind of another expiring. Right, because if you're just trading multiple second round picks again for an expiring contract, like, sure, they'll help you get more wins again for this season, but long term, it's not really additive, right? And you're just spending future capital for a guy who's not going to be here. So I would think that's going to be the most interesting thing I'm looking out for, is if the guy you trade for with that Oladipo contract, because they at least want to explore it, right? They wanted to keep their options open at the very minimum. If you're going to trade Oladipo, Is the person you get back going to be signed to multiple years? That to me is probably the most interesting thing to watch for at the deadline with Houston. I think they're obviously going to be an active team that's on the phones. Whether or not they actually pull the trigger on this, we don't know. We know they wanted to keep their optionality open, right? So what they do with it is going to be interesting.
Well, it's not just Oladipo, it's Landale. Yeah, I mean, Landale is essentially an expiring. So, I mean, that's what, Oladipo's at 9.45, Landale's at 8, so that's 17 right there. I mean, you could even throw in Jeff Green's contract into that mix too. And so, like, you have the ability to add
a lot.
You know,
yeah.
I think that's, they structured those contracts smartly, where obviously the Jock Landale, there's some sticker shock with the Landale contract, but again, only the first year is guaranteed. So
if you throw in Tate there, if you throw in Tate to that mix, you're talking like roughly over $35 million in salary that they can bring back. Like, that's a serious player.
I mean, they love Tate.
Yeah.
They love Tate. So I don't think they'd ever.
Well, I mean, if it's a serious player, like if you're talking about $35 million in salary, you're not talking about like a role player you're getting back, right? Yeah. Like, you're getting a serious player back. So I think in that scenario, they'll throw in Tate, right? Like, I think that's like a off the wall possibility, right? That they actually trade for a star this year. I don't know if that's actually something that's feasible, but I think it's something to monitor, right? Like I don't think Houston is naive about that, right? You're right. They structured that very intentionally. Like, this summer, what they did with Jeff Green and Jock Landale was so interesting. And I think not that many people in the national media really know about it, right? Like how they structured the deals, or Jayshon Tate's current contract that they signed last summer, how they structured his deal, and how a team could just wipe those contracts off their books immediately if they wanted to, right? And that gives them so much flexibility financially. So it's going to be, I don't know. That's something to watch. I don't know if someone like of that magnitude becomes available, but if they do, Houston's I mean, they're in position.
Yeah, they're for sure. And even if you want to, you know, stretch it out to next summer, I mean, yeah. Or not next summer, right? But you still would have some other contracts if you did want to go that route. Yeah, so they have a lot of options that they can go with. The question becomes, well, okay, if we go trade this guy, is that going to take minutes away from somebody who we really value for the future? So that's the tough kind of balance that they have to strike with that. Like, they could use another guard off the bench. Like, let's be honest. Not having Kevin Porter Jr. has really hurt the bench. And so they could go and they could find some guard somewhere who they could bring in, but that's going to wind up taking minutes away from Amen Thompson. And is that worth it? The answer would probably be no, unless it's like an elite type sixth man. But those are the questions that they have to answer. And for the first time in a while, they might be in a position to where they have to say, do we want to go for it now? Or do we want to maybe hang back and still give some of these young guys minutes? So it's a good problem, I guess, to have at this point.
I mean, there's some interesting options out there. You got Malcolm Brogdon, Buddy Hield, right? Like, there's some good names out there if you really want to go into it. But and you know, by signing those are guys signed to multiple years, right? So if you trade for those guys, you have your mid-level exception this summer, right? And you have those guys for the next season, right? Which is like, you know, there's a double bonus there, right? Like that's partially why Houston did this. I don't know. That to me is going to be an interesting story. It's November 9th. We shouldn't be talking about a trade deadline, but it's natural because what Houston did.
Yeah, but Hield isn't expiring though.
Oh, he is? Hield's expiring. Okay, okay. For some reason I thought he had another year left. Okay.
Yeah, but that's an easy contract. I mean, it's 19.2 that he's making. So that's very easy to come up with. I mean, we just gave you the two contracts right there that get you to 19.2. So yeah, that's an easy one if they want to do it. And it's kind of a position of need, and he's a shooter, which is a premium type thing. Probably wouldn't, but Indiana might be good. So who knows?
Yeah, for sure. Well, thank you so much for coming on, Adam. Can you please tell the people where they can find your work and your social media?
SportsRadio610.com, also the H-Town Hoops podcast with Brandon Scott. And you can follow me on Twitter at Adam Spolane, ADAM SPOLANE.
All right, talk to you down the road, Adam.
All right, see ya.